Welcome back, beloveds, to another beautiful episode of Experiment 301. I'm your host, Brother Beloved, also known as Kevin K. Pierce. And I have a real special guest in the building with me today, ladies and gentlemen. Real special guest, a dear friend of mine, always in my corner. I could always look for her for some support. Melanated queen extraordinaire. Mental health extraordinaire. Psychologist supreme. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Miss Dahlia Duncan. In the work, not, but you gotta put the supreme on it now so that later they know what they gotta know.
Add that onto the degree, got it.
There we go. Yeah, once you get the first degree, we good from there. When you get the first one, we good from there.
Okay.
Right, so what I like to do, I like to start with the beginning from all my guests. We're gonna start from your origin and work our way up to your trip up to SU. So we're gonna start, the year is 1996.
Perfect.
And a young Dahlia Duncan is born to who and where?
I was born in Queens to Eustace and Roberta Duncan.
Mm-hmm. Your parents have such Caribbean names. Oh my God.
I know. It's so trendy. It's so trendy.
Very much. Like, you didn't have to tell me. Like, it was just like, Eustace. Oh yeah.
Eustace
jerk chicken is fire. That's what I know. that's what I know. Oh, man. So talk a little bit about coming up as, are you a first generation American? Did your parents come here straight from Trini or?
Actually, my dad's an immigrant, but my mother's parents are immigrants also from Trinidad. So my mom was the first American born, and so then she had us. So we're second generation.
Mm-hmm.
But being second generation with a first generation parent, one, and then an immigrant parent, two, is still difficult because at least there's one person who understands some of the American culture, but then you still have like the traditional ways through the immigrant parent.
Oh boy, don't we?
Yeah.
I say, as a first generation American myself, for those of y'all that don't know by this point, both my parents came here from Sierra Leone. Like 18, 19 with nothing on their back and made it happen. Shout out to my folks. But I always find it interesting talking to people about different things they deal with growing up that other people's parents just don't understand. Like, for example, people didn't understand when my mom would call me randomly and we're praying on the phone with some people from Nigeria. Hey, amen.
Yeah.
It's just the culture.
Or wait, you say, oh yeah, bye grandma, and then you're like, there's a whole prayer.
Grandma gotta cover you before you go now.
Oh yeah, before you go, before you get off the phone, before you got on the phone, and in the middle of the phone conversation,
mm-hmm.
You know, there was that. There is like slippers, flip flops.
Oh.
You don't get flip flops. You get the like the leather one.
Oh yeah.
That goes around your whole foot and scratches. You know.
We call those the walk on water fives around here. Y'all know
what
y'all doing with jewelry over there, man. Jewelry, y'all doing a fantastic job. Doing the Lord's work, if I do say so myself. Uh-oh. Did I lose her again?
Did I lose her?
All right, bet. She's right there, bet. See, part of doing this whole online podcast thing, people, is, you know, the technical difficulties that come with it. That, you know, I don't got to worry about if she's standing in front of me. She's not going to lag out as a human. That would be crazy. But now, you gotta deal with things like this. But you know what, it's all good. We're just here to create content for y'all, people. Back to Ms. Dahlia. So how long did you stay in Queens before we made the move?
I stayed in Queens until I was about 7 years old. And then in between like getting out of school in May and starting school back in August, which is when I would have turned 8, I actually moved to Indiana.
Indiana? So not including your family, I'm going to put the over under at 3 other black people in your city.
Cool. I know for a while we were the only black family in my town.
There we go. If you chose the under, you won, ladies and gentlemen.
In my specific town, I want to say we were the only black family, but in the town next to us, there was another family, but there were about two other families of color.
Oh,
by the time I was in middle school. So in this point, when I was 7, going on 8, I was entering the 3rd grade. So, you know.
I just pictured this little aggressive Queens girl being dropped in a, like, middle suburbia. And letting the little Susans have it. Like,
I wasn't as aggressive. I didn't have to be aggressive. That's the funny part. I really didn't have to be the aggressive type of person because people already listened to what I had to say. Like, I was setting up playground, you know, you can only play with this after.
Oh, you was the boss boss.
I was the boss, period.
Friggin' Stringer Bell of the playground.
Bet.
She had the whole thing on lock. I like this. See, I always knew Dahlia was a boss, but I didn't know it was started at that early of an age.
I'm a mother's child. I say that. I am a mother's child.
There we go. So how long are we in Indiana? And what's like your best Indiana story?
Oh my gosh.
So y'all had your own little, not Easter egg hunt, but just egg hunt.
That we had to. So my brothers and I, we hid everything. We had a pretty big property. So we hid, like, all these little Fabergé eggs, like, one by the pool, one by the water. It's like this water pump for the pool. We had one under the bushes. Mm-hmm. I know one of them ended up on the roof somehow. And then a few others we just, like, hid in, like, big piles of snow. So we just waited. We didn't see them for, like, another 6 months.
Hey, yeah.
Like, mowed the lawn, he was sick, and there's a few of them still missing, now that I think about it.
To this very day, y'all haven't found all 12?
Yeah.
Hey, yeah.
There's one left, it's a blue one, he says it's a blue one, but I don't really think he knows.
I was about to say, how would he know if he hasn't seen it?
Because he bought them, so he stuck with, like, we did this when I was, like, 13, or, like, 11 or 13. He still is upset that there's one missing. He was like, I bought those eggs. They're supposed to be antiques. They're supposed to...
Antique eggs, he says. That joint might have messed around and hatched by now. It might be a full-grown chicken.
It is what it is.
That joint might be somebody... Might have been somebody dinner in, like, 2013. I'm not even going to hold you.
Should have just let us be kids and do what we wanted to do. It's snow. Like, it's not that crazy. But now you lost out on eggs you wouldn't purchase for no reason. So...
There we go. So now you waste the money and I got to plan it. So now, who's the real winner? There we go. So, let's take me into, you said you went to CT New England area when you're 16?
I did. I moved to Connecticut when I was 16. I went to the second half of high school out there. And
is it more suburbia?
Most definitely. I mean, I lived... like right on the edge of West Hartford. So where I lived is literally West Hartford, and you cross the street and you're in Hartford. So you, like, I got the best of both worlds. I'm a city person, so I like being able to come and go and see the differences. And also, if I wanted to just chill and relax, I can stay in West Hartford, which is, how do I describe it? It's I don't want to say crappy, but it is
suburbia. Just that's the way to describe it. Suburbia.
Yeah, definitely. That is West Hartford. But I met one of my best friends out there. Same as Indiana, I met one of my best friends out there too. So
there we go. See, making lifelong connections everywhere we go.
Always.
So, at what point in your life is volleyball introduced?
Volleyball was introduced when I was in the 6th grade, actually. So I had this home ec teacher who, she was honestly the sweetest person ever. And I thought she was so sweet. And then, I don't know what, I think she, like, took off her flip-flop, and I saw that she had this big old tattoo on her foot. And I was like, yeah, she's a boss. And I just loved her from the jump. So I was in 6th grade. Her name was Mrs. Brunkhart. And she was so sweet, and she was so pretty and just such a nice person. And I would help her out with stuff after class. And she was like, you know, we need someone to be a manager for our teams, for volleyball. And I was like, I don't know. And my parents talked me into it, and that was it. You know, I started being their manager, and then she started showing me how to do stuff. And it wasn't until that point that my dad even told me that he played on the national team for Trinidad when he was younger.
And excuse me?
So this is now what you want to tell me?
Yep.
You and these big words, first of all.
You said national team, so I assumed Olympics.
National team for volleyball. So I don't know if he went, I don't know if he was planning on going to the Olympics or not. But yeah, he really did wait until I was in sixth grade to even say anything about that. Like, that wasn't, you know, part of his story. Oh yeah, I just came here for no reason. By the way, I used to play for the national team, so.
See, now I even got you saying Olympics.
Yeah, you know, you got that in my head. I'm going to have to, you know, gas my dad's head up when we get off this call.
Oh, yeah, we got to gas my man Yusuf's head up. Man. My man is a... Now, the thing with volleyball, though, I feel like people have a certain image in their head when they think volleyball player, especially women. They think of, like, the 6'7" white girl that just so happened to be blessed with hops and able to spike the ball with some aggression. But our dear friend Dahlia here is about 5'3", 5'4"?
5'2", even better.
See, I give her Olympic grads and an extra inch or two.
I love it. Yes, I'm only 5'2".
There we go. So she's a soaking 5'2", but still managed to get the work done in volleyball. So let's talk about your volleyball career a little bit.
Yeah, so my volleyball career was kind of rocky, honestly. I feel like even from a young age, when I started in sixth grade, people would tell me, oh, you can't play front row, you know, you can only be a setter or back, a DS, which is, you know, defensive specialist, so back row player, and that would really piss me off, just because I could jump as high, if not higher, than the girls that were on, I was on the team with, you know, so people didn't, it took a while for my coaches to really want to invest that time and energy into my skills until one time I was peppering, and those of you who know what that is, peppering with one of my teammates, my coaches saw, like, wow, she can jump, she can dive, she can also set, like, that's a utility player. And for me, that was important because it allowed me to showcase all of my talents as opposed to just having a stick back row. So I was a utility player pretty much my whole career. But a lot of the times, in order to get playing time, I had to stick with being a DS, so, or a back row player.
I was going to ask, so did you run into that same problem at Stevenson, or no?
Oh, most definitely. And it was tough. So, right before I came to Stevenson, it was actually like March of 2014. I was playing for a club team, so that's pretty much like just an out-of-season team. And I was playing for them. We were at this really big tournament, and I was playing really well. And we were playing on this thing called Sport Court, and that's pretty much like an inch or two of rubberized court that's typically on a concrete flooring. So part of my foot was on the Sport Court, and part of it was off the court, and kind of like hovering over that concrete, and I fractured the side of my foot. So I got injured right before I was supposed to have gone to Stevenson.
Wow.
Yeah, so I had surgery a couple days after. I had a screw put in. It's still on my foot today, and I was really happy that I did not choose to go to Stevenson based on sports. So I went on academic scholarship completely because I was like, well, it's a good thing I didn't choose volleyball because that would have ruined my whole, like, starting semester and maybe the first year. So
see, that's what young athletes need to hear. I know y'all like these athletic scholarships. They're nice. But the moment you get hurt, bro, your coach is going to snatch it from you.
Literally.
Might want to back it up with some academics. Might want to keep that GPA above a 3.5 just to be sure.
Right. So, you know, I really, for like probably 2 days right before tryouts were supposed to be, I was like, I'm not going. You know, I didn't spend the whole summer trying to practice and get ready. Like, I did some stuff, but my leg had atrophied quite a lot. Like, up until the middle of freshman year at Stevenson, my leg was still smaller. One leg was still smaller than the other, like, weight-wise. Mm. So I had to, like, beef that up while I was at Stevenson. But I made tryouts. I beat out two girls who were already on the team, which was crazy to me.
Hold on. Yeah. I got to hit the stun button. Proceed.
Yeah. That was pretty much that. That was my start at Stevenson.
So before that, how were you recruited to Stevenson? I kind of jumped ahead a little bit.
I wasn't recruited, actually. Like, I was initially going to go to St. John's in New York. And, you know, I don't remember what they call it, declaration day? I don't remember. But the day that you choose, except that you're going to go to that school.
Yeah. Decision day?
Decision day. I don't know why I can't come up with the word. But decision day, I think 2 days before decision day, I literally told my mom, I was like, I don't think I should go to St. John's. And she has this weird smile. She was like, I agree, baby. And just looked at me. I was like, okay. So I had to apply. I had to send emails and make phone calls and put all this stuff together within a matter of 2 days and get accepted. And then, like, I was like, oh, I guess I'm going to Stevenson now. And that was, like, in the middle of April.
So coming from Connecticut, how did Stevenson even enter your radar?
So, actually, when I went on a tournament in Maryland around that time.
Was that your first time in Maryland at the time?
No, it was in Philly. We went to Philly first, and then we went to Maryland. So we went to one of them, and my mom started talking about it, and then we went to Maryland. And my mom was like, you know, you should go and talk to the coach. So I was like, I rolled my eyes. I did not want to go talk to that man. I'll be very honest. Because I just felt like it just felt so formal. I don't know what I'm supposed to say to him. What questions do I have? Because I just came to the tournament to play. I didn't come and talk to this man about anything.
Right.
So she was like, yeah, I sat in, you know, a little conference that they had. And he was talking about it. I think that's what you need to go to or you need to look at. And I'm rolling my eyes at my mother, like, oh, my gosh. Next thing you know, we came back to Philly. I saw him again, and he came and watched me in one of the matches that we had. And I was like, okay, so he's watching me now. Let me, you know, do it. And then he left, and the next match we had is when I fractured my foot.
Wow. In Philly.
So that was my first time really being in Maryland, that first time with when I met the coach. And then Philly is where I actually fractured my foot, and here I am in Philly again. But yeah, that's kind of my first go around with that.
So there's a little bit of irony here that I find great. So that tournament, you end up going to Maryland and then Philly, or Philly then Maryland, whatever the order was. And then your college career, you end up going from Maryland and then back to Philly. We're gonna get to the whole Maryland back to Philly thing later. But I just want to point that out now. Put a little pin in that for our little stroke of irony. So now we're at Stevenson. I love asking people this question. It's my favorite Stevenson question of all. Compare Mustang Day Dahlia to Graduation Day Dahlia.
I think,
and that's usually the first part of response is usually like a ooh or a laugh.
Ooh.
People sucking the life out of the heap when I ask this question.
I think Mustang Day Dahlia, I feel like I've always been very confident in saying that I know who I am. So that's been one thing that whether I was 2 years old or I'm 22, you know, I feel like I've always known who I am, even in the moments where I'm changing and growing and learning. So that's not one thing I had to worry about. I think things that really changed the most were how I presented myself. Like, Mustang Day Dahlia was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to wear the Mustang. I'm going to wear the Stevenson shirt. And I'm going to match my shorts to the girl that I think is going to be my best friend for the next 4 years. And, you know, it's going to be really cute. And I'm going to, like, dance around and be cutesy. And we're going to be cute, me and that girl. But I think Graduation Day Dahlia was more of just, like, I didn't come here to really make best friends. But even though I didn't do that, I still ended up with them, not the ones who I expected. And then it's just more of like, so I guess solidarity in who I am and who I have in my circle. I think that was really it.
Perfect.
Like, Yeah, Mustang Day Dahlia was like, oh yeah, I don't mind being friends with them. And now Graduation Day Dahlia was like, what friends? Oh, you mean that one girl over there in the big crowd of people? That one person? Okay, girl, come on. Like, that's it.
Not someone that knows you. It's funny you say that because I definitely noticed freshman year Dahlia was definitely like, we became friends because you knocked on my door and just said, what's up? like that. She lived across the hall from me. She just knocked on my door. Hey, we're neighbors. What's good? And I'm like, she seemed cool. And we've been kicking it ever since. Senior year Dahlia would never. Never.
Yeah.
Like, you're my neighbor. I may ask for a cup of sugar, maybe, if you're lucky.
I probably won't, actually. I will take my butt all the way down to anything. I will go to the, what did we have up the street? Was it 7-Eleven?
It was a 7-Eleven one way and a Safeway the other.
Yeah, I was going to 7-Eleven. I didn't like Safeway for the longest time, but anyway.
Safeway do?
I don't know. It's like certain stores I don't like Kroger. I don't know if you know what that is.
We don't got Krogers in Maryland.
That's an Indiana thing, a Midwest thing, I'll say that. So, Kroger, Safeway, ShopRite is, like, working its way to me liking it. Acme is hard for me to get used to. Yeah, I don't know.
Acme where Wile E. Coyote get all his explosives and shit from?
This is also true.
Okay. I don't know what you're doing in that store, but we're going to keep you off the FBI watch list for now. So, talk to me a little bit about life as a psychology major at Stevenson. I always say psychology majors are the most interesting people. Because people that want to learn people are just interested. So how do we get into the psychology field and talk about your journey through it at Stevenson?
Okay, that's a great question. Wow, look at you just coming out with the bangers.
Trying to get on my Oprah shit, man. Trying to be on my Oprah shit.
So I actually got interested in psychology when I was a junior. In high school, I decided to take a summer class. I didn't really have to, but I had nothing better to do. So I took a summer class, and I took it with this teacher, and he was just so eclectic, and honestly, he was just weird, just so weird. But he was funny, and he just seemed like he just wanted to love on students in the most respectful way possible.
Okay, good. I'm gonna say it's 2020, man. You better.
And I had to, you know, I can't like that.
Yeah.
He was cool. Like, he just made every day fun. I felt like I was just like a child all over again. Like, to him, I was a child. But, you know, it just seemed like so cool, and I just learned so much, and he would always make us watch these videos. And mind you, this summer class, we were there for like 8 hours, it felt like. It was so long. But this was the first class I actually, like, majority of my high school and some of my college career, that I actually read the textbook and was like reading different parts, not to answer the questions for homework, but like truly to understand, to gain more knowledge, to do more research, to just like see and get more information. So at that point I was like, oh, I guess I know what I'm going to major in.
There we go.
So I stuck with that, and I took them for AP Psych as well, you know, so that's how I started. But Stevenson's psychology program was probably one of the best decisions I've ever made, because my advisor at the time, shout out to Dr. Tulloch, that's my school mom. Like, anyone who really knows me knows, like, Dr. Tulloch was my school mom. I did my thesis with her. She was the advisor for my club. You know, I met some of my best friends who I consider like older sisters to me. I met them through her. You know, it just was such a positive experience, and I loved every second. I love most of the sections.
I was about to say, don't you sit here and cap right now.
At first I was only thinking of all the positive stuff, and then I said, you know, there were some other times.
I mean, hey man, in the scope of 4 years, it's gonna be some good and bad.
Yeah, you know, it'd be like that.
It'd definitely be like that. So, let's fast forward a little bit to the post-grad life. Let everybody know what you're doing now. And I'm going to get the stun button ready. So, just let it be go. Let it be known. Talk about it.
So, currently, it's like my life is a whirlwind. I moved out here with the understanding that I was going to be starting my post-grad life at Villanova, so getting my master's. No, we don't even need to son on that. So I was supposed to be getting my master's initially in human resource development. I took the intro first, and I said, this ain't half bad. I took my second course, and I was like, yeah, this ain't it. I hate it here. And I was like, is it the major or is it the school? So I'm thinking, maybe it's a school. Let me look around. I decided to switch back into counseling and psychology. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I could just do the program they have at Villanova. Cool. So that's fast forward to January 2019. That's when I decided I'm going to switch back into my counseling mode and do that.
Did the same thing happen?
Well, apparently I switched way too late, and I couldn't, like, they were like, had you switched before, you could have gotten a refund, you could have got this, you could have got that, and I was like, well, we're here now, so now what? And they said, well, you know, why don't you apply to be a non-matriculated student, which pretty much means you get to take two classes, you still pay us, but you don't get a degree from this, you just get to take two classes, and then you have to apply to the actual program, and then you get accepted, possibly, and then you possibly get your degree. So, you know, I wasn't even able to start those classes until the fall of 2019. So I had to wait all the way from January till the fall of 2019.
And you're still in Philly this whole time?
Still in Philly. And mind you, this whole time I'm contemplating if I'm going to switch schools, you know, if I'm going to switch programs, maybe I should move back to Maryland. I'm not going to lie. At that point, I really wasn't feeling Philly like that at all. Like, I wanted to just leave. I hated it here.
Shout out to all the Philadelphia listeners.
Yeah, you know, my bad, y'all, but I'm not from here. I'm still trying to learn. And it's even worse when you don't really know anybody out here, and then the people you do meet, you're just like, I mean, you're cool, but I don't really feel that connection to you. So, yeah. I was not feeling Philly up until maybe last November.
So what were we doing in between January and November?
I was working in different places. I worked like 5 different jobs since I moved out here in the end of 2018.
Again, a true Caribbean.
Yeah, no, I mean, 5 different at different times. Right? I wasn't working all at once, but I was constantly trying to figure out like, what kind of space do I want to be in? I was a receptionist a couple of times. I worked at a spa for about 6 months. I was working at a nursing home, and I loved it. I love old people. I'm not even going to lie. I wasn't cleaning nobody. I was taking care of purely activities. Okay? So, fun things. That's it. But I loved it. I love them old people.
Gotta let the OGs, if you will.
I mean,
the OGs and OGs.
They were just old. These ones were just old.
Dang, they were no G's?
No, there were no G's.
Ah, you're right.
Okay.
You're right.
There were two G's.
There were two G's?
I was one of them.
Damn.
my coworker, I forgot that. Her too. There were the
workers. There we go. 3G light connection.
You know. But yeah, I worked in the nursing home, and I actually recently was working for a company that provides resources to people with OCD, anxiety, and depression. Mm-hmm. And that was like my first, you know, in-field job. And so I actually really liked it. But all that happened right before coronavirus hit. So it's like, you know, yeah.
So I really want to highlight that part of your story because for a lot of people, they picture, oh, I'm going to graduate from college, then I'm going to go straight to grad school, and I'm going to get my degree as also adult world. It don't work like that half the time, fam. Like, it don't. And that's okay.
I'll be honest. At one point, I kind of hit a depression before I started working. I hit a couple of depressions, but in regards to post-grad life, I hit a depression because I just was like, I moved out here for literally one reason, to go to school. And I'm out here, and I'm not going to school. So I don't even know what I'm supposed to be doing with this point in my life. I don't know where I'm supposed to be going. And quite frankly, I'm not even sure how to change that right now. Because there's so many possibilities that I definitely didn't look into when I decided to come out here. So between, you know, feeling like you're wasting money, you made a wrong choice, you're making your decisions, you know, like, it's just, that was a hard moment.
So how do we work ourselves out of that hard moment? Where are we at now?
So right now, especially amidst the quarantine, I'm really just focusing on the connections I have with other people. I'm a huge reflective and journaling person. So, like, I know anytime, for me anyway, when I get in those modes of, like, almost faulting myself for not being where I feel like I should be, that's literally when I'm like, yeah, you're looking way too close to this. Like, you're looking way too hard at yourself. Mm-hmm. You need to take everything with a grain of salt. Like, this happened for a reason. That happened for a reason. It's going to get better, but that doesn't mean it's not going to require some work from you. So I had to just take a step back, reflect on what I want, reflect on what my goals are, because even if I don't reach those goals, I know I'm working towards something else. So, for example, before I wanted to get my doctorate, and I still do, but I'm like, opening up that field, that thought of even wanting to get my doctorate made me go further into, well, what type of psychology am I interested in? Well, what piece is more important to me than the other, right? So, like, what really feels like a passion for me? The other piece is I have a blog as well, so writing about things I've experienced, whether it's breakups or friendships or job experiences or just my own personal emotions about things or, you know, sexual assault, like, in the past and stuff, and things that are going on in this country, you know, that was really important for me, and I still have my blog going on now. So I have consultations, I do different stuff, like, I just try to keep myself busy at this point, even when I don't even know what I'm doing.
There we go. So, like, there was a lot to unpack there, but I want to start with the introspective piece, because as an introspective person myself, I feel like there's a balance there between searching inward and sometimes just a little too critical. Like, sometimes you're nitpicking at yourself. And it's like, you have those expectations. Of course, you hold yourself to the highest standards you can. But at the same time, we got to find a balance between correcting the wrong shit and being overly introspective, if you will. You have any thoughts on that? Because I'm still trying to find... I think I'm closer to finding that balance now, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And that's something that I would tell my patients, too, because it's so easy to hold a magnifying glass to ourselves and be like, you did this wrong, you should be doing this, you should be here. And I think it's more about, like you said, creating that balance of saying, like, hey, let's take a step back. The magnifying glass is starting to have a little fire, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, it's really about forgiveness. Forgiving yourself is super important. You know, there are times that I'm, like, about to go to bed, and something that I did or said that was really stupid, that I'm like, oh my gosh, like, there are people there who saw that. That's going to be the impression of me. Like, that's how I, you know, you get stuck in this thought loop all the time, and I'm like, oh, let me take a step back, because that was, like, 40 years ago.
Right.
You know, give yourself some forgiveness and some space to be like, I make mistakes, I'm going to keep making mistakes, but that doesn't mean I don't have the time and space to improve. Like, it's that balance that you have to find for yourself. Like, even for me, I've had to, like, literally make voice recordings saying, like, yeah, doll, you messed up, it's not the end of the world. Like, literally talking to myself and giving myself that pep talk I would give a friend. That's how I have to create a balance sometimes, because sitting here looking in the mirror, I'm like, nah, girl, you still fucking up. You know?
So the next part of that is, we are in a quarantine. At the time this episode released, hopefully we're out of quarantine, but not likely. Not likely.
Yeah.
I don't want to fill the people's heads up with false hope. So you touched on it a little bit, but what are some tips that you use and you suggest others to use to stay mentally healthy during this quarantine?
That's a good question. I think for me, it's really about having things around me that bring me peace, like plants. For some reason, just looking at it, it's aesthetically
pleasing. Plants bring me peace as well.
Right, they just bring me peace. So, like, for me, that's important. Having a cup of tea, like, in the morning or at some point in the day, makes it just a little more calmer. It makes me feel like I just kind of have more say-so over my day. Getting outside, whether it's on my balcony or, you know, going for a short little drive or a walk, like, that's important for me. And then also just some type of structure. So whether that's, okay, from, you know, 10 to 4, I'm going to work on this, I'm going to work on that. Like, making myself have some structure is important. And also, like I said before, connecting to people. I'm literally always on the phone. My boyfriend says it all the time. You're literally on the phone with somebody all day, every day. And I am. Like, my mom, my dad, I have two brothers, my grandparents, my cousins. There's always some, and then my friends, and then him. Like, there's always someone on the phone with. And that's important for me, to stay connected to other people and just talk, because I can talk all day.
So. There we go. And I feel like that is important. A lot of people feel alone during this quarantine, man. And they need to know it's okay to reach out to people and just say what's up. Like, just talk your best friend's ear off on the phone for an hour so you're not sitting there looking at your third Netflix show in a row. Like, just
right. And the other piece is, like, even if you are alone, learn how to be okay and alone by yourself. And so that doesn't just mean, like, I'm going to sit in a room and be like, okay, well, here we are. No, like, you have to, it's like dating yourself. If you're dating somebody, you want to do things that are going to bring, you know, some type of connection and bond. If I'm going to hang out with you, Kev, I'll be like, okay, what are you interested in? What do you want to do? Like, I know I like amusement parks, so maybe that's not what you like. We find some common ground. We sit and say, this was fun. This was enjoyable. We have some inside jokes, you know, like.
Absolutely.
You gotta date yourself, even when you can't go anywhere, but be at home by yourself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I feel like there's an underlying theme to all this. I don't think we said it precisely yet, but be nicer to yourself. You've got to be nicer to yourself. Like, we're back to, it's okay to make mistakes. I forgot who had told me this. I wish I could remember. But they were like, sometimes you got to look at yourself as, like, your five-year-old you. And be like, would I rip five-year-old me a new asshole if they did this? Like, back to the whole crying over spilled milk thing. Like, it's there. Yelling at you ain't gonna clean the shit up. We just gotta clean the shit up.
Right. It's gonna have to be cleaned up, period. It's still gonna be spilled or done crying. And there's also nothing wrong with crying about it. It doesn't change anything, no. But what it does do is it airs out some of those negative emotions that you have, so you can actually go and clean up the mess.
So I was funny enough, I was actually on the other side of the crying argument before, and there's probably some toxic masculinity. There's probably some toxic masculinity there somewhere as to why I was like, nah, we ain't crying, we hard body, we going. Not really, you know, letting your emotions out in other ways, yes, but like, as far as letting the tears out, I would try my best to, whether it's a significant other or a friend, to be like, nah, don't cry, you don't need to cry, da da da. Until you just see later in life, you learn. Some people just need that release. Like, some people just need to get it out. Like, some people really don't have. I mean, think about it, crying is like as primitive of an emotional expression as we have. We come out the womb crying. That's like the first thing we do. So for people to resort back to that to offload their emotions should be more common and more accepted than it is.
I definitely agree. And I kind of just feel like it's one of those things where it may not be today, it may not be tomorrow, but I guarantee you, you're going to stub your toe a few years from now, you're going to be bawling like a baby, and it's not going to be about your toe. You know, it's one of those things. Like, it won't happen right now, but it'll hit you when you least expect it, and you don't even know why. It's just like this huge outpour. You're crying for days, or you're sitting in this emotional sadness. Your body is like getting rid of all of that emotional stress, all that emotional pain that's been hidden and sitting on you for months or years, depending on how long you've been holding things back. So,
and I'm gonna switch over topics a little bit. Because you're talking about talking things out, one of the ways I deal with my emotions is therapy. I used to say I go to therapy once a week, but now I'm on Zoom with my therapist once a week. So it's a nice little transition. I think everyone should be in therapy for some way, shape, or form because two reasons. One, the reason I like it is because if I tell my mother, for example, some of the things that I'm thinking and the crazy shit that goes in the back of my head, she thinks I'm thinking that all the time, and every time she sees me, she's going to do it. With my therapist, I can stop seeing you whenever I see fit. If you share my business, I'm going to own you and your family. So, like, so there's a lot of wins here. And on top of that, you need to get it out. You need to vent. Sometimes you need someone to tell you you're not crazy for thinking these thoughts. You're not alone. Things of that nature. So I know you do more coaching for now until we get a certified counselor, but talk a little bit about therapy, coaching, and what you're doing to help people in that regard.
I first of all want to say I always love it when black men period, but black men specifically share about their mental health space, because I just feel like it needs to be talked about more.
Absolutely.
So I'm so thankful to know another black person, a black man, who engages in therapy and sees the positivity in it, because that's really what
I'll be one better. My therapist is also a black man.
Isn't that amazing?
It took me forever to find one, but I finally found one.
That's the worst part. The fact that it takes so long to find one. Like, I remember at Stevenson, I was like, do y'all have any black therapists? And they were like, yeah, we have one. I said, I'll take her. It's not available till next week. I said, that's fine. I'll wait. I've been sitting for this long. I'm fine. You know, I'll wait. I don't care.
You said next week. With some people in insurances, like, one time I called one, it was a completely black-owned therapy spot. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. I can't wait to go here. And they said it was a three-month waiting period. I signed up anyways. I'm like, all right, cool. I'll rock out for 3 months. I'll see how I'll go. 3 months called. I called them back, and they acted like I was Helen Keller. They were like, yo, we ain't never heard of you, seen you, nothing. So it can be hard to find people in that process, which is why there's other things like coaching that they can be introduced to. I want you to break that down a little bit for me.
So I just talk about the difference real quick. Therapy is more long-term. Like, you're talking about unlearning or learning new behaviors, how to respond to things, challenging the way that you think about certain things. So, like, for example, you have person A who is, like, just kind of sees the world through these lens of, like, being angry and the world is a terrible place. You should always be on guard. You have person B who's like, no, everything's peaches and cream. Like, everything's cool, you know? So it's kind of like challenging the way that you think through another person's perspective, or just seeing kind of the theme in your experiences and the people that you've dealt with, so you can unlearn that toxic behavior and not really surround yourself with those types of people. So that's more of like therapy. Coaching is more about something specific, so it's usually more short term. So if that's, you know, I want to get a promotion, I want to be in a better spot financially, or, you know, I want to work on this one relationship, but I want to end it. I want to get better just ending things, you know, whatever that is for that person. Mm-hmm. It's really about the short term. It's not typically like, oh, I've been going to therapy and seen this person for like 3 or 4 years now. So I personally right now, like you said, am sticking with sort of the coaching aspect, but my goal is to get my master's and go on so I can be a licensed.
There we go. And I feel like, and on top of that, you're going to have like, I don't know how long your master's program is. I'm assuming at least 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so 2 years in the master's program, and I'm assuming you're going to keep coaching all the way through. You're going to have, what, 2-3 years of background, of background experience and quote-unquote patient-to-patient contact and all that there. So that's, one, that's great for you building a resume. But secondly, coaching might be an alternative that some people need to go to, because not everyone is clinically depressed. Not everyone has to unlearn deep-rooted shit from when they were, like, 3 years old. Not everyone has those problems. Those people exist.
Yeah.
Obviously. I'm one of those people. But, like, for the other people who just have one short, like, all right, I lost my job and I feel depressed, or like, all right, this quarantine is really kicking my butt. How are the more ways I can be more independent? I feel like coaching would be a much better solution for them. What say you, Ms. Dahlia?
I definitely agree. Like I said, coaching and therapy, they're both very important, but they both have the opportunity to serve different things for the person. But yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Ms. Dahlia, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for braving with us through all the technical difficulties. You are greatly appreciated. But
thank you for...
No problem. Pleasure's mine. Pleasure's mine. But we end all of our shows one way and one way only with a little segment I like to call This or That, completely stolen from Jemele Hill's Unbothered podcast. Jemele Hill, please come on the podcast. I will say this every episode until you do. Now, I'll give you two options. Very simple. There is no third option. There is no fourth option. There is no caveat. The fate of human existence relies on you picking between option one and option B. Do I make myself clear, Ms. Dahlia?
Option one and B, got it.
Option one and option B. Because if the numbers were the same, it wouldn't be right. It wouldn't be right. It wouldn't be right in the system. So, number one, as someone who spent some time in New England and some time in Maryland, you know your way around some seafood. So I have to ask, are we going New England seafood or Maryland seafood?
Oh, that's so tough, but I'm going to go with Maryland.
There we go. This is a Maryland-based podcast and content company, so if you didn't, it's going to be an issue.
I'm not welcome back.
It was going to be me and a lot of people with this bushel of crabs on their shoulder talking about some stop playing with us.
I love some Maryland crab right now. It'd be so good.
But, man, next time you come out there, next time you come out to Maryland, hit my phone, man. We'll go get some crab. We'll get a bushel. Break them down on a newspaper with some Old Bay.
You know I'm ready.
There you go. So next I have to ask you, are we going, when we got our grits, right? We going, so I'm figuring out a way I better say the second part. We going sugar grits, or we going either savory or salty? Because when I said salty, some people thought I literally meant take grits, put salt in them, and call it a day. If you do that, you're a sociopath. Not that.
Savory.
Savory, there we go. There.
You know why?
Why?
Because then you could put the seafood in it.
There we go. See? Everything comes full circle. And this one isn't really a this or that. This is more so of the go-to segment. People are familiar with the go-to by now. So what's Dahlia's go-to drink after a long day of coaching and hearing all other people's problems? How do you drink them away? What you sipping on?
A strawberry daiquiri or a pina colada.
There we go. Something fruity.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Ms. Dahlia, for joining the show. You are greatly appreciated, and you've been more than generous with your time. For the podcast listeners, thank you for listening this far in the show. You could have been anywhere in the world, yet you're here listening to me. And that's good for me and my ego. So, for Ms. Dahlia Duncan, for myself, Brother Beloved, also known as Kevin K. Pierce, this has been Experiment 301. We will catch y'all next episode.